Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo, take three. Yes, we've had a few goes at this already. It's not run smoothly, but there you go. We've got a very patient panel for you today. Top left, we've got Mr. Chris Forsman from Chicago. How's it going, mate? Bright and sunny by the looks.
No.
It's not.
Not sunny at all here.
It's overcast and rainy and horrible and...
Yeah.
Bad luck, mate. Not good go out, take photograph weather.
No.
Or are you sitting at home putting column, finishing touches to a column as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Good man, working hard. Next to him, or below him, we've got Kyle. No, that's the wrong one. We've got Alex. There we go. Oh, jeez. It's not going well today, is it? Alex Fox with the wrong lower third as well as. Jolly good. How are you, mate?
I'm Chris Forsman. Thank you very much.
Oh, Chris Forsman. You've always fancied being Chris Forsman.
You know, it's been one of my ambitions realised now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, mate. I've taken it away from you now. You're back to Alex G. Fox. There we go.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Twitterything.com. How have you been?
Oh, you know what? I've been busy doing things other than work. And, yeah, it's all right.
I've had the August I've always had, which is bugger all. And you've had the August which you've never had, which is loads and loads.
Yeah, well, I normally take August off.
I'm jealous.
Well, don't be. My September's bound to be crap. Yeah.
The way things are looking, so is mine, mate. So, Kyle is not with us. He's gone to a client's special event, and he's got a dicky bow on, and he's having to be pleasant and nice to people. I don't think he's met people in quite a long time. He's been sat in that studio for the last 10 months, just editing audio. So, best of luck, mate. Enjoy it. Back as soon as you can, though. I don't fancy doing this for too often.
That's if Ewan can read.
I've got to read the emails out, and if I'm no better than he is, I'm going to get some stick next week. I fancy.
Looking forward to it.
The week in photography. What's been happening? What's gone on? Not an awful lot. We've got a few product releases and we've got a few questions. Thought we'd start off though with a conversation. There's a bit of news that's about a guy who's a Swedish nature photographer and he's run a pile of awards, Terje Hellesso, and he's got a Nature Photographer of the Year by the Swedish Environmental Protection Agency in 2010. And this week, they've discovered pictures that he took of lynxes have been doctored. They're absolutely faked. Here's the one that he won the picture with, and I think it's a crap picture, I have to say. But there you go. And the reason it's such a crap picture is if you can just see it right at the bottom of it, there's a lynx there, and the lynx is apparently photoshopped in from another one that isn't even a picture that he took. It was a picture that someone else took. And apparently suspicions were raised when Hellesso claimed that he'd seen 150 lynx in 9 months. And one of the lynx specialists who's devoted his life to studying the lynx, called Gunnar Glerson, said he'd only seen 15 of them in 52 years of studying them. Which was kind of the giveaway. So there you go. Though I thought it was an interesting one, because photographs have been faked since forever, haven't they? So, mm-hmm. I mean, do we have a problem? I mean, I've got a bit of a problem with this guy winning an award with a photo that wasn't even his. But, I mean, things like manipulation of photos and that kind of stuff. We get a lot of emails from people saying it's right and a few people saying it's wrong, and photorealism is something that should be a genre in itself. I mean, is there any attempt where we're saying that you know, there's a limit on manipulation? Here's, you know, you can do levels, you can do dodge and burn, you can do cropping, but after that it's fake and you can't do it. Because that's what they're saying now. There's an awful lot of push in the media for realistic photos only to make it into print.
Well,
go ahead, Chris.
I mean, I think there's more than one way to look at this. In this case, I definitely feel like this. I feel like there's an ethical line that was crossed. I mean, he took someone else's photograph, passed it off as his own. I just feel like as a photographer, like, I would feel unethical doing that.
Yeah, it's kind of dirty.
If I were creating a photo illustration, you know, for something like, I mean, I Photoshop pictures together all the time for articles.
Yeah.
But it's marked as a photo illustration, so you know that it's been purposely manipulated, and usually you can tell that we've taken different photographs and put them together, usually for comic effect.
Yeah.
You know, we're not trying to say, you know, that this is an actual, you know, true recording of what happened.
Mm.
You know, I feel like there's definitely, there have been some issues where, like, serious news photographs turned out to have been photoshopped. And a lot of times, and not for any good reason. And I feel like that's definitely, like, you know, that's trying to pass off a lie, I feel like. So I feel like there's an ethical line, and I feel like it's context sensitive.
Is the hard part where to draw that ethical line, though? Where to say enough is enough? Where to say this is right, but this is wrong?
Oh, I don't think so at all. I think you're talking about two completely different, if you like, art forms. I mean, I when I take pictures for the emotional content, as far as I'm concerned, you know, like a wedding picture, as far as I'm concerned, if it's something to do with me or my family, etc., it has to be the original shot. Warts and all, problems with the picture and all, Auntie Mabel in the background falling over and all. That is what the picture is. It's capturing a moment in time with people that you care about. So what was going on is intrinsic to the photograph. If you want to do something that's completely manipulated, that's absolutely fine as well. But it has to be stated. It has to be seen in the context of as being a manipulated photograph. I think both genres are equally as important. I mean, the trick is, and this is why, you know, this is our argument as photographers, the trick is to be able to take that emotional content photograph and it being as perfect as a photo that you manipulated.
Mm.
So that's the great picture. It's the one that combines both outcomes, but only doing it the honest way. But, you know, when I take work pictures, I'll take them, I've become lazy, I'll take them in the easiest possible way for me, knowing that, oh, there's a slight bit of shadow under there, but I really don't want to go and get a reflector to try and lift that, whatever. I'll use shadow and highlights later. So in my work photography, in general, I take whatever's the quickest and easiest for me, and therefore I'm out of the customer's way as quick as possible. I'm sure you do it yourself. Because no one wants their premises filled up with photographers all day if they can help it.
No, I mean, I think laziness takes over separately. I mean, if the one thing that I've always used as a maxim is you shouldn't shoot for the darkroom and you shouldn't shoot for Photoshop. Definitely.
I don't shoot for it, but I look at, right, 95% of that picture's good. That bit there. I mean, for instance, the other day I took a sculpture. Now, the piece of background I was using was torn in a corner. And if I was doing it on film, I would have rearranged the whole shot to make sure that corner didn't show. I was doing it on Photoshop and I thought, you know what, why am I bothering? I will shoot it. It was a background. I will clone back the background afterwards from another bit of background. Mm. So in that respect, I've become lazy, but it was just life is too short to care when you've got the option to fix that so easily. And it wasn't an intrinsic part of the picture. But as I say, if you're taking something as an honest photo of something that's important, like a news article.
Mm-hmm. Well, now here's the interesting thing. Because as I picked this story up on Monday, I wrote to you guys and said, you know, let's have a discussion about this. And I deliberately went out and looked for some photos of instances where this has been used, both to an excessive degree, not so excessive degree, good end result, bad end result. Go back to your point, Chris, about photojournalism. One of the pictures that was quite famously over here was a picture of a soldier in Afghanistan directing a crowd. And the crowd was coming up over a hill. Mm-hmm. There's a picture of a guy saying stop. The Afghan guy's looking at him. If you've got the video podcast, you can see it now. If you haven't, go and get the video podcast.
But I remember this picture.
Yeah, and the thing was that these two images were taken at that location. The guy was on a tripod and never moved one bit. And the photographer, the guy with the gun was there at one moment and the guy walking with the child was there at another moment. And it was taken as a piece of news footage, if you like, there to demonstrate the situation that it was at the time. Now, the soldiers were there and were controlling the crowd of people that was there. But these two images were merged together to create this idea that, you know, it depicted what the reality, but in a fake way. Now, the guy was hung up for this. I mean, he was stripped of all of his rights as a photographer for it, and I think he worked for one of the papers, Daily Mail or something like that, or Chicago Tribune, and he was vilified for it. But I've got to say, even though that's reportage and news, I don't have a problem with depicting the essence of what's going on through a piece of photography. There was also the picture of Michael Jordan, wasn't there? Slam dunking the ball, and the ball wasn't actually there in the shot. He took the ball off another shot. And again, I don't have an issue with that.
It depends. Again, it's context. It depends on that. If that was an artistic interpretation of a moment, e.g., it was painted, would not have any problem with it because of, you know, it's an interpretation. It's if you've got an interpretation and you try and pass it on as a real moment in time, that's where we've got an issue. If the photographer had said this is an artistic reproduction using Photoshop of the scenario going on at the time, we'd all said he would have had exactly the same emotional content and he would have had exactly the same point. It's the fact that he tried to pass it off as a moment in time. That's where I have an objection.
Agreed. So
you're saying photography has to be a moment in time and nothing more?
If you're claiming it to be a moment in time, then it has to be. If you're not claiming that, or you make it, you know, make sure people know that it has been manipulated for whatever reason you want, then that's okay as well. But you can't claim one thing and do another. You just can't do it.
In that image, the chat room's saying, and they're absolutely right, the guy that's holding the child is clearly looking at someone who is giving him an instruction. They happen to have put the soldier in the picture as a representation, and probably in the real scenario, the guy was looking at a soldier out of shot who was giving him an indication. Now, I mean, I'll grant you, I'm in a total agreement, that's not a moment in time, but the essence of what was being done or what was taking place at that moment in time is represented by that photo. So using that as a reportage image, I've got to say, I don't feel the need to see that and have a disclaimer written at the bottom of it. It's an essence of what took place.
Yeah, but
we're in an art form, mate.
That is exactly the point. It's an essence. You need to make it out to be an essence. The skill in photography, in professional, or not even professional, in true photography, is capturing a moment in time, not creating one. Right, and that's a fundamental point. You're capturing something that happened. If you want to create it, people have done it since... Well, the first photography that was ever done was a creation. No one went out and took a picture of something. They brought animals, they brought backgrounds, and everyone sat in a studio with clamps on the back of their neck, creating a scenario to photograph. It was a theatrical piece.
Well, here you go then. Here's a few examples that I've got for you. I've got a picture here of Abraham Lincoln stood. It's a classic kind of propaganda picture of him stood with a map of the world and the American flag in the background, and it looks like a picture. And it's Abraham Lincoln was used this as a famous advertising or propaganda picture. It's actually not a picture of him at all. It's a picture of someone who stood in for him and then his head was put on afterwards. And that is a moment in history. That is a significant moment in history from a political viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't him.
And it's trying to be an artistic interpretation of a moment in history. And I would say that's different. I took a picture years ago of a secretary for one of the galleries. And the reason she was wearing a certain dress. And the reason I had to take a picture of her is it was just before Diana got married to Charles. And she was exactly the same size. And the gallery had got involved and there was going to be the official portrait of Diana for the wedding. Now, this girl being exactly the same size wore the dress because Diana was just far too busy. The artist only got time to take pictures of Diana and do a couple of hours of sketching her sitting down wearing a dress. But to get this thing right, you needed someone else to stand in to produce an artistic interpretation of the moment. So it didn't matter that it wasn't her being photographed for the outcome, which was a painting. With what you just showed me, it's not trying to say this. I don't agree that that's trying to say a moment in time. It was the equivalent of a painted portrait in the very earliest days of photography. So they would do a very similar thing. It would be the same standing. If that was painted of Lincoln, someone would have stood there for 20 hours while someone painted it, and Lincoln would come in at the last moment just so the guy could do the finishing touches, which is exactly what they did with a photograph. It's the same thing.
There's another one here.
Meant to be an artistic thing.
There's another one here. This is General Sherman from the American Civil War. It's a picture of all the generals together, and the one on the left is every single general associated with the battalion that sat there, and the one on the right is the original picture that was taken without one of the guys in, and there's a space left for him to be photoshopped in afterwards without Photoshop. I mean, a lot of people, when I talk to them, talk about everything's Photoshop these days. It's all about Photoshop. You know, I don't believe anyone believes that the camera doesn't lie anymore. The camera's never told the truth. I Photoshopped in inverted commas in a dark room 20 years ago, 22 years ago. For Pretty Polly, you know, this has always been about airbrushing and stripping in images and overlaying images and masking images to re-expose them. It's been going on since the dawn of time. It's what photography is in its essence. No?
I think Alex will agree with me here, but in effect, what we're saying is that From now on, you can never believe the authenticity of any photograph.
You never could.
Which I don't think is necessarily true. It's possible to take a picture of something that actually happened to capture a view of it and not manipulate it, and it can be a recording of what happened. The issue, and this is why I think the photographer got in so much trouble, is because When you say, well, it's mostly like what happened, so it's okay, then you keep pushing the line. It's a slippery slope. And that's why news photographers are held to a higher standard.
Okay, so I'll go back to the 1960s. Jane Fonda is speaking to anti-war rally for Vietnam to veterans, and the picture of her speaking to them is really nasty because it's under a piece of canvas. So what they do is they take her out of that, they mask it out, and they put her in next to another bloke who's actually at the rally, and he's right next to where there's this big piece of canvas. And the finished photo, yeah, John Kerry, and the picture is Jane Fonda sat next to John Kerry talking at this anti-war rally. It's representative of what took place that day. I don't have a problem with it being the fact that she's not under canvas and she's been stood next to John Kerry, because the two of them were next to each other. It was a moment that occurred. She was next to him. The fact that they've created an illusion of the fact that the single picture was taken of her next to him, I think is utterly irrelevant, because she was next to him. It's representative of the true event.
It depends what you're trying to say. I mean, in this context...
I disagree. I feel like, you know, if the photograph that they wanted to show was the two of them together, then why didn't they take the picture that way? I mean, I just feel like as a photojournalist, that is just utter laziness.
It's also it's more than laziness,
it's
isn't
dishonest.
It's lying. It depends. Yeah. You know, you said, like, we go back to the Abe Lincoln, or you go with the colonels or the in the room. To me, that is the olden days version of, say, a film poster. Mm-hmm. You don't see a picture of a film poster believing that moment on that film poster is real.
Well, how about this one of Joseph Stalin with one of his aides that wasn't there? Or Mao Tse-tung with two of his aides that weren't there? Or Hitler with one of his aides that weren't there and ratted in afterwards because they couldn't make the shoot?
But the thing is, they're done for... It depends. Again, that's propaganda.
Yeah.
It's the point of it. But
it's propaganda being passed off as real events just the same.
Well, that's what propaganda is.
The other one was a news event being passed off as the same, which it actually probably was as closer to than this thing was.
Well, taking context, right? I could stand in my garden, right? And I could start shouting at the trees, right? I could then get a picture of that and then put that in context of another time when there was loads of people in my garden, right? And it will look like I've got loads of followers listening to every word I've said.
That's a lie. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm not talking about lies. I'm talking about this event occurred. this person was stood next to this person, but they weren't stood next to this person so that I could take the picture. So I took two separate pictures and I gave a representation of the event of these two people stood next to each other. That was the truthful representation of what actually took place that day. That is different from me creating an image, which is a blatant lie to create a perception which is untrue.
But that's just it. We don't even know, like, now that we know those photos have been manipulated, we can't really say for sure that they were actually there together. We don't know that.
Well, that's where I've got... No, this is that's exactly what I'm saying, though, Chris, is that if you're talking about the fact that you have a declaration that says these people were together that day versus a thing that says, well, they were never there together and I photoshopped this to make it look like they were there together, then those are two entirely different scenarios, and I'm not worried about me getting a warning for the one that is mm-hmm. a representation of the real event. I'm mm-hmm. worried about the one that's... I have to get a warning that's clearly a representation of something that wasn't the real event.
But you're using the correct word. You're using the word representation. A representation right. is not a photograph. A photograph is a fact. A representation is an idiosyncratic idea of the fact. It's not the same thing. It's like advertising. You know, you did it yourself, you know, with ladies' clothes or whatever it is you were photographing. Yeah. It's accepted that when you take a picture of a model... I don't think anyone looks at a model or looks at a picture in a newspaper of someone looking glamorous and don't expect that in some way it's been doctored, tidied, you know, and time immemorial has always done that. But, yeah, exactly.
So there's a picture of Ralph Lauren's super skinny model that's photoshopped beyond belief. I mean, her head is about 20 times too big there, and her inside leg measurement is ridiculous lengths, which is, I mean, that photo is clearly bull. But, I mean, if you go back to Chris's point about the Jane Fonda, John Kerry thing, if mm-hmm. I said, Jane, would you come over and stand next to John and pretend you're speaking and I'll take a single photo of the two of you pretending that you're at the rally, how's that any different than me taking a picture of Jane Fonda, a picture of John Kerry, and merging them together and saying they were close together but I couldn't get a picture of it?
Because it's still a fact.
No, because right, if I stage the photo and drag her over and say, pretend to be speaking at the rally so I can get the picture that I want, so I don't have to put a declaration that I photoshopped it.
But it depends if you subtitle it
a Jane staged Fonda. Photograph.
Well, it doesn't even have to be staged. If you say Jane Fonda and such at a rally, that's fine. Yeah. If you say Jane Fonda announcing her, making her speech at that rally and it's the faked up or it's the staged photograph, then that's wrong. It depends what you're trying to say.
There's a real fine line here.
And I think it comes down to context that photojournalists are held to a higher standard, and there's a reason for that. Because if we accept that photojournalists will lie to us because they couldn't get the shot they wanted, then we can never trust, you know, what if those pictures, you know, came out of Iraq, all the prisoner torture and stuff, those came out, and then everyone was just like, oh, it must be photoshopped and it must be faked. That couldn't have really happened.
Yeah.
You know, what then?
Well, they also did the ones, though, that that they had Piers Morgan with over here in the Mirror, where they were actually people pretending to be prisoners and being abused, and they'd taken them around the back of a tent in on a caravan site on a farm to make it look like it was people being abused as Iraqi prisoners.
Right. And I feel like that crosses an ethical line if you're faking photographs to... knowing that people are going to assume that it's real and taking advantage of that, that's completely unethical. I mean, and that's why, again, like I said, I agree with you that that photo could have been marked as a photo illustration.
Mm.
Right? And there'd be no question. But it was passed off as this actual event actually occurred as you see it.
I think we're in total agreement on that situation, where we're saying that this is fabricated to create the myth or a lie. There's no question that all of us are on the same page on that one.
Right.
I think what we're on a different page over is the fact that if I ask a person to stand next to another person and pretend to do something so that I can take a picture of it because it is representative of what they were actually doing, I don't have a problem with that, because asking people to pose is part of photography and it's representing a truthful image. I don't need feel the need to see a declaration against that image.
Well, but I also think there's a difference between a posed photograph and having them fake doing something so it looks like you're getting an image of what actually happened. Because I've done photojournalism before, you know, like in college, I shot for the college paper and things like that. It's a hard job. It's hard. And sometimes you're not always going to get the shot that you really want, or it's going to give you the emotional impact you think it needs or whatever. But, that's your job, is to do the best you can. You might be stuck in a crappy position, or you might be, faced with two people that you want to be in the same picture aren't close enough together. You know, it's up to you to frame the photograph, or, you know, to reposition yourself or do whatever, and not try to create some scene. And again, this is what I'm talking about, photojournalism. I think and I believe that we have a higher ethical standard for photojournalists.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason for that, because once you walk down the path of, oh, some manipulation's okay, some trickery is okay, then there you're going to get to the point where you have people just passing off complete fabrications as, this is the truth, this really happened. And then we will, you know, we won't be able to trust the people that are, you know, that we expect, you know, them to tell us the truth and tell us what really happened. We won't be able to trust them anymore. And that, I think, is why it's such a problem for photojournalism. Do I think that photo of Jane Fonda and John Kerry slapped together is okay? I don't.
Right.
I don't think it's okay.
No, I don't either.
You know, and you know, could the person have, you know, moved around, or maybe yes, maybe not? Could they have just, you know, shown one or the other pictures and it would have been fine? Totally.
So my question is then, Chris, you're saying that the manipulation of that photo and the pulling over of Jane next to John in the picture is wrong. That's fine. What about then if I say, Jane, would you come over here and stand next to John and pretend to be talking so I can take that picture?
I feel like that's just dishonest too, because you're telling them to fake something when it didn't happen. I feel like as a photojournalist, if that were my job to be there and record that event, I would just do my best to position myself, you know, or to move around, or, you know, change my lens or do whatever I could to capture what was really happening. I feel as a photojournalist, it would be my job to make that happen, not their job to stand the way I want them to make it easy for me.
Mm.
That's how I view it.
Alex?
I think in summary, I see, in a funny way, I see important, and I say important photography, meaning items that are there to capture history. We take certain pictures. I mean, photojournalism is a very good example of it. We take certain pictures to make a recording for historical reasons. You know, it might be, you know, a wedding picture or whatever, but that picture has got a historical emphasis. It's not there to be artistic. It's not there to be an art form. It's there to give a historical representative of an actual moment in time, so you or someone else in the future can see exactly what the person who took that picture saw through the camera lens at that exact time. And I think in that context, any manipulation is wrong. Any staging is wrong. If you're doing something for, if you like, an advert, if you're doing something which is deemed to be possibly or probably set up for, you know, like a film or like a staged photograph or any of those things, then I think it's acceptable. But you can't pass something out. You can't pass something off as a historical fact, capturing a moment and given an emotional context. You can't pass it off as one thing if you've done any manipulation to it, and that's how I feel.
So, what's the limit on the manipulation that you can do? Then, are we saying levels?
You can make the photograph more pleasing to the eye. Yeah, you can level. You can sharpen.
In the world, according to Alex.
In the world, according to me. If you're right, you've got two people standing next. I did a christening for a friend recently, or a confirmation, one of those things. A really important picture. The aunt who never comes to England, she was standing next to something and her hair blew across that other person's face. It was only a little bit of hair, but it had blown just enough to distract the other person's face. For that reason, and the fact that it was the only shot I could get of that person at that time, the person I shot it for said, "Do you mind taking that hair off the other person's face?" And I did it. And because of, I suppose that's as far as I go, because it never changed the context. It never changed the point of the photo. It just made the other person in the photo, you know, not look like they were overshadowed.
Right.
By
now, hang on there. Let's take the image and say that that person is actually someone fairly famous who you know, and a copy would be like to be given to the Sunday Times for their society spreadsheet, and it would be a picture of HRH XXX christening of their child.
Right.
Would you feel the need to say, yes, but do bear in mind there's a bit of hair being taken off this lady's face?
Yeah, of course I mentioned it. I wouldn't have done it. Like I said,
No, hang on a second. Would you require the Times to write a slogan underneath saying, this is a picture taken from the real event, however, a piece of hair has been removed from this woman's face? Because it was unartistic.
I would. Personally, obviously not in such a, with, you know, long manner. Personally, I would like it if it somewhere, it was, if you wanted to read it, it would tell you that that picture had been doctored in some way. Oh, yeah, I would personally like it.
That's,
but in a family context,
because when you use the word doctored, people look at it and go wholesale in their head. They don't go, a piece of hair was removed from her face.
Well, there
is such a negative connotation of saying doctored.
Yeah, but that's because of people have abused it.
Yeah, true.
If people obeyed the rules of what myself and Chris are talking about, you wouldn't have the need. A doctored would just mean that some cosmetic change has been made to try and make the photograph more appealing.
There's a point here in the chat room from Sarah. She's saying, if you say that, though, Alex, the problem is they won't believe the picture at all. And that's my point, is that's a valid picture of the day. You've just taken a piece of hair off a woman's face. That can't be unacceptable to say that that is a moment in time, therefore.
Well, you know, I'll give you my absolute honest opinion. If I'd have given that to the Times, I would have given it to them with the hair over the face.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it to my friend for a family album. I took the hair off the face because I'd been asked to.
Wow.
But I actually showed them the original picture, so they weren't being lied to. They saw the original picture.
No, that's fine. But what I'm saying is the Times would take the hair off the face, and I would not decry them for doing that, and I would not expect them to publish a disclaimer for doing that. That's my point.
I know they wouldn't, and I know they'd only take the picture off me if I gave them permission to doc. You know, when you do give certain pictures to certain places, when you sign the contract for them to pay you for it, yeah, a lot of it, there is a percentage and there is a contract saying that they are allowed to do X, Y, and Z. And there is paragraphs about the amount of manipulation and the reasons for manipulation.
But that's a different conversation from the one we're having, Alex. And the conversation we're having is at
my
level.
But I would give it to them with the hair on the face.
Right, and if they removed it because it was a photo that was given to them for their free license and use to publish because it was the property of the person who was the notoriety, the individual HRH, I wouldn't have any reason for me to want to see a disclaimer on that, even though it supposedly is not, according to your definition, a moment in time. I don't see the point of that. That's ridiculous.
If you say so, I would be disappointed to see a photo of mine be doctored.
That's a different discussion.
Yes, I'm saying, but I would be disappointed if they printed it and did it. I know, in the context of what you're talking about, they would do it.
Let's say they took it. They took a picture of HRH's baby's christening and they took a piece of hair away from a woman's face because it made the picture look better. They're going to have to say that that photo was doctored. That is ridiculous in my mind because people will not believe the image at all at that point.
Right, and this is why I keep talking about a slippery slope. Once you start down it, right? Once you say, oh, well, we took the hair off. It's just like you said, now people won't believe it at all because we have come to view manipulative photos as a lie. We know that photos have been manipulated to lie to us on purpose. Just like you said with those propaganda photos. Those photos were manipulated on purpose to lie to people, to make them think a certain thing.
Mm.
And that's why they don't like the word doctor. Just like Alex said, it's been abused to the point now where if we don't just give, you know, a straight photograph, if we erase details or add details that weren't in the photograph, then that is no longer a photograph of the truth. It's, you know, a representation of something that's similar but not exactly what happened. And so that's why I feel like as news organizations, as photojournalists, there is a higher standard. Just like Alex said, if it's for the family album, sure, why not? You know, they were there. They know what happened.
Yeah, but like I said, if that's an HRH photo of a christening, I think the standard is too high in that context. That's the trouble. And that's where you start drawing the line, as you say, slippery slope and very fine line. Final word goes to... goes to Carl in the chat room. He said he found that this picture was passed off as realistic as quite distressing, because he'd always assumed that it was realistic and it wasn't. Apparently it was photoshopped, but there you go. You need to get the video podcast for that one. The news from photography. That was a good discussion, a really good discussion. I don't know how much time we've taken up, actually, whether we need to move on too much. No, we're all right. The Nikon 40mm f2.8 GAF-SDX micro Nikkor lens. It's a shame that Carl's not here to actually decrypt that for us. He's finally, allegedly, on sale. But there's been a bit of trouble trying to find it. Did we talk about this the other week?
We talked about it being a nice lens.
It does look great, though, doesn't it? It's got this nice slick look to it, nice curved edges. I think the price was going to be around £275, didn't they say? Or $275, $300, there we go.
£250 in England.
In England. Is this going to be a lens that you're going to want to buy?
It's a DX, so for the professional market, it's slightly limited. But for the animal market, where did I get that?
Yeah, because animal photography is on the rise.
Exactly. Because for the amateur market, I think this is a must-have piece of kit in your camera kit.
It looks great, doesn't it? I mean, I've got to say, I love my little 50mm Canon lens that was £75, and I take it everywhere with me. It's exactly that kind of lens for me.
Well, what's interesting is if you've never used this sort of lens, you're going to be really disappointed when you go back to your zoom.
Yeah. I mean, there's got me air barreling up there. It's 2.8. It's going to make you get up and move as well, which is great. I think it's a must-buy, especially at the price. 250 seems really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, I mean, not much field. Good for landscape, but for everything else, it's a brilliant. It's what every. There should be a kit that you could buy as an amateur, and they should advise you. Well, you can have a 28-200, fine, but there should be a kit that you always have one good short macro lens. Now, I think this is very, very good value as well.
Has this got macro on it?
It's a micro lens.
Oh, it's macro, yeah. It is micro. No, it's just one micro lens, but it's got macro as well, so yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, your view on it?
Just as a note that Nikon has always called their macro lenses micro Nikkors.
Right. Yeah.
So, no, it's a great lens. It's great. The price is really good. You know, if you're shooting with one of the not the top-of-the-line Nikons with the full-frame sensor, this is a great value. It's, you know, the performance of the lens looks amazing.
Are you going to be buying one, Chris?
Just as soon as Alex buys me a Nikon.
Oh, you haven't got Nikon, right? I thought you shot Nikon. No, is Alex, are you going to buy one?
Yeah, I will. I've got some DX format cameras, and I will definitely have one. I tell you what's interesting. I just looked up the geometric distortion, and it's zero.
Wow.
Which you don't often see.
No, not absolutely. Adobe has announced Carousel, a cloud-based imaging service. Now, you picked this one, Alex. What struck you about that as a story?
But at the moment, you've got various small functionalities on the Adobe, I don't know what you call it now.
Photoshop. They've got Photoshop Online, which is excellent, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's processing. Really just for, you know, things that you take on your iPhone, that sort of thing. Now, this is a bigger version, but it's an upload your collection to and manipulate it online as if it's like almost a full version of Photoshop. At the moment, it's still available for your iPads and iPhones, etc., but it's also available for Mac now, and they will bring out a Windows version soon. So for people that, you know, need good functionality on a piece of software, but they don't need it too often, because obviously if you're going to, you know, work on these things every day, you're going to just buy a full version of, you know, Elements or Photoshop. So people that need the high quality but not that often, I think it's a £99 a year subscription or something.
Yeah, there's
$99.
No, there's incremental elements. If you want to go for initial setup costs, it's $59 a year or $5.99 a month, and that goes up to then $99 a year after the introductory period. But you get all the predefined presets and that kind of stuff. There's a whole series of filters and predefined effects that you can just apply as a one-click thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're being all three of us photographers. Nobody does do it as well as Adobe. You know, I mean, Apple have had a good few goes, and you know, Corel have had a few goes, and there's some half decent stuff. But you know, the expertise, the people that really know what they're talking about when it comes to photo, computer photo work, is Adobe. And for $100 a year to have access to some very, very good high end adjustments to photos, bearing in mind we're not talking about photojournalists, of course.
It's unlimited storage as well, I think.
Yeah, I just think for that, I mean, I haven't read the full functionality of this thing, but if you can then share photos from it as well and use it as a, you know, a depository for photos.
Repository.
I just said that, I thought that sounded wrong. At least I didn't say suppository.
Yeah, exactly. Thank God for small mercies.
Yes. I think it's very good value.
Good.
I'd like to have a play with it first, but I think it's a very, very good move.
Chris, any comments?
Well, one thing I think is really nice is it's designed to make, you know, Adobe's basically, they're putting their own cloud storage service along with this. So if you upload photos from your Mac or you take pictures with your, you know, iPhone or iPad or anything, those all get synced to all the devices automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes kind of a basically an optimized version of the same engine that's in Lightroom. It's a little bit simplified, but you can still get results similar to what you can get with Lightroom, you know, within certain constraints. One thing I see this as, I can imagine pros in particular using this as, you know, they can sync their Lightroom libraries to the cloud and then take their device to a client's house, for instance, and say, here, let's just look at the proofs, and here I can click this. If you want it to be in black and white, it'll look like this. And, you know, I could see that definitely as being a really nice tool for professionals. But it's also,
yeah, that's a good idea.
I think it's kind of, I don't know if this is a great description, but I feel like it's sort of like a really, really good Instagram for the casual users.
Yeah, instead of getting a crappy effect on your photos, you actually get decent effects.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
Instead of desaturating and reticulating a perfectly good image to start with, you can get one and actually enhance it. Mm-hmm. Good, so thumbs up then. It's available for Windows coming soon and Android coming soon, it says. And here's the good news, Alex, there's a 30-day complimentary subscription available as well. So
I think it's really worth it.
Try before you buy.
Yeah, exactly.
Samya released the 7.5, 3.5, f3.5 fisheye.
Sorry, Kyle.
Yeah, good man. I've deleted the story now, you bugger. Samyam released a 7.5mm fisheye at f3.5. Anything to say on that one? Because I've never heard of them before. And Chris, you said that they go by several names worldwide.
I've seen lenses manufactured. There's a company in Japan called Gosina that manufactures lenses like this. I think Samyang is also another one, but they get marketed in other places. In the U.S., I've seen lenses marked as Phoenix. I've seen them marked as Vivitar. I've seen them even actually marked as Gosina. So, you know, the actual origin of the lens, I don't know. They're typically inexpensive, you know, and what I would say is basically good enough for the money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there really isn't much in the way of fisheyes out there for Micro Four Thirds. So people who are interested in that, there's definitely a way to get in for a pretty low price. The nice thing about a fisheye is because, you know, it's you're obviously going for distortion, so there's not, you know, the lens doesn't have to be of utmost quality to be able to get the fisheye effect. So
it's interesting as well on the specs that they're showing that it's going to be coming in at €300, which is a good price really for something like this, and it's talking about 180 degree field of view, which I've got to say I don't believe. I mean, typically fisheye at, you know, you get around 165, 170 degrees. Mm-hmm. 180 is not really something I've ever believed when I've read the statistic on it. I mean, that's more than you get out of a door aperture viewer for a security thing. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. But it's a nice little thing, isn't it? Yeah. And it looks very pretty as well. It's in beige. You want to see?
I've just noticed something. Yeah. If this got 180 degree,
why has it got the lips up the side?
It's
diagonal. So corner to corner.
Okay, that's lucky. I just thought that don't work.
I still, it doesn't make me believe it anymore, though. I still don't.
I mean, it's interesting. Can you imagine? I mean, I've used fisheye in the past, just playing around with it. But the only time I ever used it, tried to do a room shot because it was meant to be an artistic room shot, I couldn't look through the camera.
I've got to say, I never get great results when I've shot with anything below 12 mil.
You look through the back of the camera distorted. And I have no idea what I'm looking at.
Yeah, absolutely.
You might as well shoot with your eyes closed. And some people say I might as well do that all the time, but that's another story.
Moving on. Shall we do some questions?
Sure.
Yeah, as long as you don't want any why good not? Answers.
Question one, we got this via Twitter. James put this one in today. If you were going for a neutral density filter to use on a sunny day to keep the depth of field and for some longer exposures, would you go to a 2, a 4, an 8, or a 16? James in the UK. Chris?
You're going on a sunny day. I mean, each one of these levels is basically a stop, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're looking at sunny F16, so I'd probably want to be at a much larger. I'd go with like an 8, I think. That'd give me a lot more latitude.
Yeah. So you're saying if you're going to buy it for this kind of circumstance, get the 8.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okie doke. Alex?
Yeah, again, I would have said, I mean, again, we're talking raw here, but if you sit right in the middle, then, you know, if it's slightly brighter or slightly darker, you're not going to have any issues. If you go to either extreme, then you're absolutely limited to that extreme. So I would always, if, you know, obviously if you've got the money, then buy more than one.
Well, that was my thought on this, because, I mean, you, when it comes to neutral density filters, it's the one filter that you can buy where you can go loopy, because if you're talking about, you know, you've got four lenses even, say, a spread of 52 millimetres to 77 millimetres on the fittings for the screw threads, you could spend a pretty penny here.
I mean, obviously you can buy adapters that fit anything. Yeah, I mean, I've got some clip-on filter adapters, which, you know, the neutral density filter, one of the ones I got is square. So, you know, you sit it on the front and it's literally like a rubberized adapter that sits on the front of whatever lens you've got. So there are ways round of not having to have so many filters for so many different lenses.
But yeah. The trend in the market is not to have interchangeable filters on pre-mounts. It's to have screw-in filters on.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those. I mean, you get a lot of, it's funny, I sometimes look at secondhand cameras and lenses, and the amount of lenses that have got a filter screwed to it, and I hazard a guess that the person that owned that lens never even realised it was a filter.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Another bit of glass, you know.
I responded to this on Twitter straight away, and the one thing I've always done with neutral density filters, because you can just spend a fortune if you're not careful, is I've always just bought one for each lens aperture that I've got, and not lens aperture, you know, lens thread that I've got, and I've just kept it at 4 and then done the rest in Photoshop when I've got back. I mean, really, with a neutral density filter, all you want to really do is take the edge off so that it just gives you that little bit more flexibility in camera afterwards. And
yeah,
4 I mean, seems to just take the burn off, the whites, and it's good enough then to start.
Well, that's just the thing.
It's the only time I kind of shoot 4 Photoshop, if you like.
Yeah, but I mean, like you say, you can use them raw, and you've got either recovery, which will, you know, bring up some of those lights that you may have dropped down, or either the other way around, and then you've got fill light to bring it the other way. So if you sit in the middle, you can in Photoshop achieve exactly the same result as long as you start off in the middle with your filter.
I shot in RAW this week, fellas.
Well done.
You'd have been proud. You'd have been proud.
What?
Did you have to sit down when you did it, or
no? I was...
Did you feel dirty? I'm not sure. How does it work?
I did some quality products. Okay. I did do some really nice stuff actually, but one of them was this: the fan-assisted solar-powered hat. I shot that. So when you see that on the net, I shot that. There you go.
Okay. Did you put your name on it, or were you a bit embarrassed?
High quality. No, free job, mate. Favour.
I couldn't charge anyone to photograph their eyes.
I thought, I don't want to screw up that hat, so I'm going to do it in RAW. Right, question two. Hi, Kyle. I'm just starting out with Photoshop Elements 9 and wondered which books the team would recommend to get me going. Thanks, Drew in Aberdeen.
That's a difficult one, because I've never bought a book on Elements 9. I don't want to say Idiot's Guide, because that's just rude.
Oh, no. Never buy Idiot's Guides for photo stuff, definitely. And stay away from Deke's Photoshop Bible, because it's just too much. Although it's comprehensive, it's too much.
No, it does stop the door blowing shut, though, when it's windy.
Yeah, good and thick. Chris, any suggestions here?
Yeah, I would go probably the Missing Manual series first. That's from O'Reilly. But also, Scott Kelby has a really good book, Photoshop Element Design Book for Digital Photographers. And then there's always a Classroom in a Book series, and that's published by Adobe.
I would have said, generally speaking, the thing to remember is that if you're at Elements 9, you're probably getting a great number of the features that were in CS2, CS3. Something like mm-hmm. that. So a lot of the books that were written for CS2, CS3 will be good enough to do for generally the stuff that's available in 9. There's more in 9 Parade in some areas perhaps than those books. But if you look at a lot of Scott Kelby, I was going to suggest is the great one, because he does sectional projects. How do you achieve this picture? Here's how you do it. And most of the stuff that he does actually would apply in everything for Photoshop from version 7 maybe onwards. You could do quite easily. I certainly learnt Photoshop with Kelby.
One of the things I would say, and I've got a few websites bookmarked for this very thing. There's an awful lot of video guides and advice and tutorials for Photoshop and Elements on the web. I think I would probably start by having a good look through the web, because you'll get a really good idea of what you're most interested in.
Yeah, good Photoshop tutorials is excellent, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few that I look at and I think, it's almost like you just said, I see them do something and I want to do it. I want to copy them. It's a bit like Don with his Mac Streamcasts.
Yeah.
You know, you see someone do something on Photoshop or Photoshop Elements on one of these video tutorials. And of course, you can go back as many times as you want. You can stop it. You can try it. You can play with it. That you'll learn far more functionality. It's like the way kids learn. They copy someone else. You'll learn far more functionality by actually copying something you've seen on the video on Photoshop than you'll ever do any other way. So never forget, the web is absolutely full of free tutorials of where Photoshop and Elements is based.
I'd say you definitely learn more by project. So within that, there'll be functionality that you'll learn of cutting out or level change or magic wand selections and those kind of things you'll have to do to get that project. And you're learning about that tool as you're doing that project, definitely.
There is also, I mean, I don't keep them, and for that reason, I can't remember what magazine does it, but there is a set of DVD video tutorials for Photoshop and Elements, and they're not very expensive because they do give them away with magazines, but you can buy them as individual DVDs. So have a look. There is a, you know, it's almost like a class for various parts. One week or 1 month they'll do layers, and another month they'll do something else, and it's a DVD tutorial. So they also give you the photos that they're showing you how to manipulate, so you can practice doing exactly what they did with the same photos. And that's always a very good way of doing it.
Carl in the chat room wants to know whether I manipulated the image of the red fan hat, and the answer's yes, because I couldn't get the blue and white one to sit still, so actually I took the red one and then I used Photoshop to manipulate it so that it was blue, and then I've desaturated it and lightened it so it was white. Guilty.
So how does he know?
I don't know.
Now we know why you were so against me and Chris, that argument.
Maybe I've got lazy bastard written all over me.
It's guilt. It's guilt. That's what it is. It's all guilt.
He's just replying in the chat room that he's horrified that I manipulated it. Last question. Last question. Hi, guys. When you're shooting for the day as a pro, do you switch your cameras off or leave them on all day? I heard that leaving a DSLR can damage the sensor as it can overheat. Any ideas? Thanks, Vincent in New York City.
I've never turned a camera off in my life.
I haven't either.
Mine's
probably on at the moment.
Well, quite often I pick it up in the morning and I go, oh, God.
No, I mean, my camera's all shut down standby anyway, so, I mean, they don't re-energise until you hit the shutter, so I've never switched one off. I think that's...
No, where I get in trouble is I plug them in sometimes because I can't be bothered to take the card out, so I plug them into the USB, and then I forget about it, and I come down the next morning, and it's had that PC thing going all night.
Oh, right, okay.
And I go, I've got 500 things to shoot today, and I've run out... both batteries that are in the camera, and I've not remembered to charge up anything else.
But and also, you've probably burnt out your screen on your laptop from the image being always on. Have you ever heard of that?
Sensors overheating? The sensor can overheat if you have really long exposures in bright light, but not just from having the camera turned on.
No.
Well, if you think about it,
like you said, all cameras have a standby mode at least as a default, that it'll go into a sleep mode after a certain amount of time. I think custom functions, sometimes you can change that, how long that is before it goes into sleep.
But it's default at about a minute, isn't it? Yeah.
When we're shooting weddings, we just leave them on all day because all you have to do is pick it up and push the shutter button and it's ready to go. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Good answers, good questions. If you've got a question for us, then send it in. Send it to bageltechphoto@gmail.com and we'll read them out. Every question that comes in, even if we don't use it on the show, I always type an answer to it. Everybody gets their question answered regardless. So the only problem you get is if I don't use it on the show, you only get my version of the answer.
We know what people think of
which
that.
Is obviously the only one that matters.
Yeah, of course, because you don't manipulate anything.
No, not at all. Last word goes to UK2, our sponsors. We really are in deep poop if we lose them as a sponsor. We consume more than... We broke 4 terabytes for the first time last month. 27,000 downloads of the Mac show that Andy and Atco was on didn't help. They pick up everything. We've got unlimited bandwidth on the servers that they provide for us. That's the deal that they give us. If they took that away, the bill that we would get would probably be a house payment each month. So we're really, really grateful to them. You can help us. If you like listening to the shows and you want to keep them free, then you need to go and buy your stuff off UK2. If you want a domain, if you want hosting, anything like that, please go and see them. Go to our webpage, scroll down, and you'll see a logo on the bottom left there. Click on that. Go through. Buy whatever you need. A hosting package, domain names, as I say, colocation services, anything you like. And when you check out, use the offer code BAGELTECH, all one word. You'll get 15% off whatever's in your trolley. If you're transferring your domain over, though, be careful. There is a charge that comes along with UK2, which is a DNS management charge. And they pass that on to you because they get it. BAGELTECH listeners don't have to pay for that. So when you've checked out, don't go straight to checkout after you put your first offer code in. Put the second offer code in of BAGELDNS, and BAGELDNS will take the DNS management charge offer as well as the 15% that you've already got off. So double the bonus there. UK2.net, we'd be lost without them. And if you want to support the network, then please go over to bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk and you can buy some shirts. And the shirts will give £5 to BAGELTECH every time you buy them. There's some nice designs on there and there's some nice slogans. And if you want one made up, if you want a specific one that's going to be yours only, then send me what you want on it and I'll gladly get it added into the store and you can go and buy it. It's not a problem at all. Just send an email to bageltechphoto@gmail.com and we'll get it done. Thank you very much. Chris, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
I'm a regular writer on ArsTechnica.com, so you can head over there and view all my many, many articles on Apple-related issues, mobile devices.
There's some great articles on Ars at the moment. Ars Technica is one of my main feeds that I use for looking for stories for the Daily Show. And the only thing I'll say that's negative about Ars Technica is when I get to look at their feeds, I take way too bloody long because I sit and read the whole article and then I'll look and start Googling for some stuff that I've, oh, how do they do that then? And you're good and you're bad in the same breath, mate.
We see that as a positive.
That is a positive. That's very good. Yeah, absolutely.
And I tweet fairly prolifically, so you can always hear me complain about Comcast internet service or
C-word.
Other gripes vegan on Twitter.
And vegan cookery, yeah. I didn't know you were vegan. We've never had a vegan on before.
I'm technically lacto-vegetarian, so I eat dairy, but not eggs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Alex, where can we get you, mate?
Well, I frequently write on my checkbook. Exactly. And occasionally I do shows on the Bagel Tech Network and not a lot else. You can get me at Alex G Fox on Twitter or Alex at twitterything.com, I think. I can't even remember what it is. It's Alex G
Fox.
And
you've still only got one video up on Twitterything.
You know what? I've been so busy. I really have. And yes, I do apologize to you and everyone else for not getting a picture up. When my life becomes my own, I will do some pictures.
Okay, mate. Jelly good. We've got the Bagel Tech photo competition this month,
it's a competition. I'll join
in. No, it's not a competition. Last month was in reverse. I put mine up late as normal. This one has been picked by James Kenny, and the subject is 9. There you go. He said to me we ought to put something that was a bit more descriptive so people know what they're supposed to shoot. That's the point. Put something up that's cryptic and people can make it up for themselves. You make at what you will of it. So this month's is 9. That's all you need to know. Number 9 or N-I-N-E, it's up to you. You could do 9 as in no, I suppose, couldn't you? German.
Well, you just spoiled my idea now.
No, he did put the number 9 on his suggestion. It was the number 9, but there you go. Anything you like. And post it to Bagel Tech Photo. If you want to post your images there, ask for comments, ask for suggestions, ask for some praise, then put them up at Bagel Tech Photo. On Flickr, and we'll gladly have a look at them. We're going to be back again next week at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. 1 o'clock. I nearly got it wrong. We're swapping places with the Max Show. Max Show is going to be at 3 p.m. and we're going to be at 1 p.m. And he said 1 a.m. Holy hell, that would be bad. 1 p.m. So come back then and see this photo at 1 p.m. and we'll do more questions and more news on general assignments and what's going on in the photo. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
I feel like I've forgotten something.
Yeah, the credits.